Latvia Weekly, your independent guide to the news in Latvia, with your hosts, Otto Tabuns and Joe Horgan. Latvian BPM, and welcome to episode number 105 of the Latvia Weekly podcast. My name is Joe Horgan. I am here in Jelgava, joined atalanati, or through distance, with my good friend and co-host, Mr. Otto Tabuns, who is over in Riga. Otto, how are you this Tuesday evening?
Hello, Joe. Hello, dear listeners. It is quite a cool evening in the capital city, and I'm glad to be back for episode 105.
Exactly. Yeah, Otto was absent the last couple of weeks because he was hard at work organizing a international conference, which is no easy task in the middle of a pandemic. You had a lot of last minute changes that had to be made, obviously, because you'd organized in a different way. Can you tell us a little bit about what that was about and what you were doing with the conference?
Yes, right. So we at the Baltic Security Foundation organized the Baltic Sea Security Conference, which was one of the final events of the Baltic Sea Security Initiative that involved over 150 participants and Baltic experts from Europe, United States, Japan. And we had intended to host our conference in Helsinki, as in Finland the situation was better than in some other European states. At the same time, it was possible only partially, and we had to do it from distance in many cities around the world, as we had people from the Baltic Sea region who participated, as well as experts from the United States, Brazil, and Georgia, who also shared their views. And in this conference, we showcased four security-related domains that were the key focus of the initiative. So that was not only defense, which, as you might know, is one of my fields, but also the societal, economic, and cybersecurity. For example, the panels were moderated by Michal Jarocki from the Milmag magazine in Poland, Majo Tarashvili from the Foreign Policy Research Institute, Didis Klevenš from the University of Latvia, and also the cybersecurity panel was moderated by myself. And it was a very interesting event. We also had the opening remarks by Mr. Esa Pulkkinen, who is the Director General of the Defense Policy Department of the Finnish Defense Ministry. And also we had concluding remarks by Lieutenant General Ben Hodges, that of course Joe would know very well, who used to be the commander of United States forces in Europe. So I think we had a great discussion and a number of recommendations in all these fields. And these recordings of the conference will be shortly available on our website, balticsecurity.eu. And this was supported by the Jamestown Foundation and the Baltic American Freedom Foundation. And I think we did a great job. And I wanted also to thank them for their support.
Well, yes. And I'm looking forward to hearing some of those recordings. You know, it is amazing. You know, we do complain, you know, about how crazy this whole situation is. But thank goodness, you know, for modern technology, just for the fact that, you know, you're in Riga right now. I'm in Jelgava, and the rest of you are all over the world listening to this right now. So we are going to be looking at, as usual, some of the things that happened in Latvia during the week. We're also going to be talking about some things that you guys can do over the weekend. I have one very cool event to offer you guys, which was kind of a, you know, weird last minute idea we had last weekend. Some of you guys participated in that, so we'll talk about that a little bit later. We'll have some week in history, a very sad but a very important one to talk about towards the end. But first, as usual, we do have to continue talking about the COVID-19 situation here in Latvia, because again, just as it has been for every week over the last few months, that is the thing that's on everyone's mind right now. And we should start with some statistics. So December 3rd was the highest amount of new cases here in Latvia. We had 930 new cases in one day, which is staggering for, you know, a country of 2 million people, unfortunately. You know, then 686 on December 4th, 794 confirmed cases on December 5th. And then we have had Fingers crossed, a decrease of the last couple of days. So December 6th, 526, and then December 7th was just 207. So hopefully that's some kind of positive trend, but it's way too early to, start celebrating because the spike has been going up in general with small kind of local dips. So that was from Worldometer, but these statistics are provided by Latvia's national health organizations. And unfortunately, we are up to 272 confirmed deaths from coronavirus here in Latvia, which is not a positive situation. And also, just one thing to keep in mind, there was a report in LSM, Latvian Public Media, that there are two people in Latvia who have had repeated infections. So they have had COVID-19 twice. The second time they had it was after that they'd already been confirmed to have gotten healthy from the virus. So it does highlight the fact that, we're still learning a lot about this. And that, it's too early to celebrate, in this idea of herd immunity that a lot of people are talking about. It's not quite so simple, which is why, Otto, the government has put in a lot of new restrictions, some of which have been highly controversial, both among the general public, but also among trade organizations and even, some health organizations as well, in terms of how these were communicated and also how they were developed. So, Otto, can you take us through a couple of the of the restrictions that have been put in the last week or so?
One of the most obvious restrictions is with regard to shopping and the ability to buy certain products on specific days of the week. If we look at the restrictions for the weekends, now there is in place the restriction to buy many or practically most non-essential goods. Those would be goods beyond groceries, hygienic products, the food for animals, pets, as well as the media products, and the tickets for public transit. You could already see that in many of these supermarkets where it was possible, these aisles of the non-essential products were restricted, and sometimes they were covered with these red and white ribbons or something else, so that it would be indicated that it's not possible to buy them. Similarly, as you would have in some shops, these parts of the shop where you would have alcohol, and they would stop selling it after the time, the 10 p.m. In the evening. I think this is probably something that you could see most obviously, but also there are these additional restrictions with regard to gatherings indoors. The 2x2 principle is back in place, meaning that in the meetings between individuals, only two people should be there at the same time, and there should be this distance. We could already see that in all the television interviews, that they all use these prolongated microphones to speak with people. And of course, the public indoor events are prohibited, and there are more restrictions that have been previously. So it is a much stricter stance that we had just a week ago.
Definitely. And there's a few others when it comes to education, which I discussed in the last episode with Carlos. But I want to go back to the shops for a second, because these pictures are becoming somewhat iconic here in Latvia. We see them all over social media. So, these are pictures of, Rimi, Maxima supermarkets, where you see, like you mentioned, these certain aisles, covered in police tape. And, you can go buy vegetables, but you can't buy a, pair of socks, or you can't buy, greeting cards. Or batteries, or like people have been saying underwear, people have making big fun of it, a lot of people see this as very foolish. A lot of people see this as very arbitrary in terms of, well, why are certain products allowed to be bought? Why are certain products not allowed to be bought? You know, I do understand that the idea behind this is so that less people are in the shops on the weekends, so that you have less people congregating. On the other hand, you know, there's been some very good points from, you know, I've seen different commentators make that if you look at the United Kingdom, if you look at certain other countries, shops have been allowed to work 24/7 even, or have extended hours to have less people in the shops at once, because it's led to a situation that we've seen here in Latvia where, for example, if people know, oh, shoot, I can't go to the store on Friday or on Saturday or Sunday, you have these massive lines. You know, I was in Rimi on Friday, you know, buying all the stuff that I needed. And, you know, it was a time when normally, you know, the shop wouldn't be full, but it was completely packed with people. So, I don't know, Otto, what's your take on this particular restriction? Because this has been the one that's been the most controversial. I'm sure that you've talked about this with different colleagues and you know, relatives and everything, and you know, friends, and people have very strong opinions about it.
Yes, that is also something that I saw in Riga as I have been here for the last weeks. So it is indeed the case. I did not go to the shops on Friday because I saw in the news, and also when I went for a walk outside, I saw that there were a lot of cars, a lot of people going in shops on Friday night to try to buy all those things that would not be available during the weekend. Well, one thing would be, let's say, alcohol and tobacco for those who plan to use that either for recreation or for their private events during weekend, which they would ordinarily buy during the weekend. But there were also many other things. For example, the shops that sold construction materials were also full with people. For example, those who needed light bulbs, or those who needed some other items that are neither food or, like, let's say, not hygienic goods, but at the same time still necessary. Well, they had to find their time after work, but before the end of the business hours for the shops on Friday, because there will not be a possibility for them to do that on the weekend. So probably, at least at the first stages, it got the exactly opposite effect, making people fear that some of the things that they need would not be available later on. So indeed, there it was a problem. And also another issue was that some of the items in the list were put in there, and on the same Friday evening also there were some things that the government took out of the list. So there was this question about, well, what is then this decisive action from the side of the government if it is not clear what they are doing, or perhaps they have put in a general restriction and they have not thought it through. For example, if we talk about the items you could buy at the gas tank, and the items that would be necessary for cars, such as gas, or let's say the liquid that is required for the windscreen wipers. Because imagine if we now have minus degrees and that freezes over, then it leaves you with a car that is not safe for driving. So it may not be, let's say, this an item of first necessity, but that could certainly be security implications or safety implications, as those people who have cars have certainly chosen to go away from the public transport and use their private vehicles more.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think there's a couple of factors at play here. I mean, you know, we've been talking about for ages and ages and ages how, you know, since the beginning of the show, I mean, you know, when we started this podcast, it was in the middle of the coalition negotiations. And, you know, eventually we had five different parties in the coalition, you know, five parties that do not agree with each other on almost anything when it comes to, you know, various political philosophies. And, you know, I think on one hand, we have an issue where we do have a very divided government, where you have different parties in control of different ministries that all have, you know, a say when it comes to these restrictions in various ways, just in disagreement with each other. I think that's one of the issues here. Another thing is that, you know, this just in general, I mean, the situation with the virus has developed very, very quickly. And it seems like, I don't know, it just seems like the government was caught off guard. You know, it is kind of depressing, though, because, you know, we have known about this for quite a while. I mean, Latvia was very, very, very lucky in the spring to have gotten out of, you know, this kind of first wave, and even kind of like, you know, quote unquote, like second wave. We had these minor little spikes throughout the summer, relatively unscathed. You know, I don't know. I think a lot of us had this kind of, idea that people were using this time for planning, you know, within the government, within the different institutions, and that we wouldn't have these like completely slapdash, I don't know. It just seems like, you know, like you mentioned, these restrictions weren't really thought through, and they just kind of seem like these last minute, very reactive measures. So I don't know. I'm definitely not the only one who thinks this. We even saw former president Valdis Dzauklis, making a similar critique over the weekend. I think it was on Latvia's Radio 1 that he was interviewed, saying that the government has lost a lot of credibility because of the decisions that are changing very, very quickly, and the measures that are changing very, very quickly. And I think it's a serious problem, because right now, you know, the government's job is not only to come up with these measures, but to be able to sell them to the general public, to use the platforms that they have available to them, to get people to understand why they're necessary, why we need to do these. And I just see, you know, both online and in person, you know, people very, very confused, in the best case scenario, or, you know, in the worst case scenario, just flat out, denying that this is even a problem, or that the, you know, situation even exists. And it's going to become, I think, more acute over the next couple of weeks. So I don't know, Otto, how do you see this shaking out? Do you have a more positive outlook on this than I do?
Well, the positive thing that still our situation is much better than for most other countries. We are still like below the EU average statistics, which is a good thing.
Wow.
In this case, if we talk about the effect of the COVID. On the other hand, indeed, it would be a question of how much of that is, let's say, the specific response of the government, and how much of it is, sheer luck or some other circumstances that are beyond our control. And it is indeed a great test, and probably now a bigger test than the budget and the tax policy was, because on the one hand, you know, that the government works in this constellation that it does, and it took a long time to get it together. So Karinč was able to get it together. On the other hand, he does represent one of the smaller factions in the government, and you would have the very big activity from other ministers who are thinking not only about their party line and their specific electorate, but also about what will happen to their political careers after this is over, and this has this political consequences that it may have, which may explain why you would have all these discussions, and you have the responses of the ministers or some opinions of ministers after the decisions have been made. Mm-hmm. And a big question, who is to blame for the things that certainly responsibles shall have to be found. For example, the inability to make the procurement of the material reserves. On the one hand, the Ministry of Defense could have done a better job with that. On the other hand, it is a question why it was pushed on their shoulders in the first place. Why couldn't the Ministry of Health do the job that they had to do in the first place? So, and it's also the matter of the Ministry of Economy, whether they actually looked through and followed up through all of these things with regard to restrictions, because it is really a bad taste and really a poor teamwork, not so much on the behalf of the Prime Minister, but on behalf of the ministers, if they take a decision and afterwards go on publicly to lamenting it. Because, well, I understand that, well, it is politically expedient to push the blame to someone else, but if they work together as a cabinet, well, they won't work together for very long if they keep steering the ship in, let's say, three different directions.
All I can say is that I think that, you know, the Jānis Bordons back in, November 2018, refusing to allow ZZS into the coalition. I think that ZZS is thanking their lucky stars right now. That was a blessing in disguise, because I think that I have a sneaking suspicion that ZZS is going to be doing a little bit better in the next election than Yakepe. But we will not get too much into political tea leaf reading, as Carlos mentioned last week, because that's still a ways away. But let's go back to Karinš for a second. So Kristijonas Karinš, the prime minister of Latvia, as we mentioned. So obviously he is receiving a lot of criticism for the handling of the coronavirus response, and also, you know, just the way the government has communicated the measures. And well, you know, he's definitely I have a hard time believing. I haven't seen any statistics lately, but he had something like a 70% approval rating at one point over the summer. I have a hard time believing that that's still the case right now. you know, but so one criticism that was not so you know, based in any kind of truth. So there was these images going around of Kristijonas Karinš in a supermarket without a mask. And, you know, my immediate reaction when I first saw these was, you know, just shock and anger, because, you know, we've had situations like this where in America, you know, Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York, you know, he was, interviewed, and he was talking about how he was going to go home, you know, for Thanksgiving, you know, with his mom and his, you know, kids, you know, after telling everybody, you know, not to do the same thing. So, you know, like we've seen these, you know, situations throughout the world of different leaders acting, you know, in some kind of hypocritical manner. So, you know, I've just was conditioned to be, you know, completely shocked and outraged about this. The only problem was that the picture was apparently from July, back when nobody was wearing masks in a, I didn't see a single person in July wearing a mask in the shop, because this was months before it was even recommended, let alone required.
It was not required then. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, like, let alone even recommended at that point. Mm-hmm. So first of all, you know, you have this situation where, you know, this is, you know, like when I talk about fake news with my students, it's not just, you know, a situation where you have a completely made up story, because this is a real picture. It's just that the picture is completely taken out of context. So, you know, we do have to be careful about this. The images that we see, you know, it's not just these, like, quote unquote deep fakes, which, you know, we hear about all the time in the news. And I'm sure Otto, you know, like you read about all the time in terms of a security threat. But also this very low tech solution, which also sows public discord. Another issue here, though, is that the state data inspection service is launching an investigation into how these security camera photos were released, because security camera footage, that's not for you know, personal use. That's not for breaking out and laughing at people, you know, who I think the English version of LSM mentioned this, you know, who like, you know, slip on a banana peel or something like that. You know, it's there for a very serious reason. It's if a crime has been committed to try to get evidence, and there's very strict, especially with the new European Union data protection laws, there are very strict measures to make sure that is protected. So Otto, can you take us through some of the potential fallout of this situation here, both in terms of you know, kind of a security perspective, and then also from a data protection perspective?
Certainly. You are right about the data protection legislation that we do have in Latvia, and indeed we do have in the European Union. It is rather strict, and I would say probably more strict than in many other countries outside of Europe. And as you can see, in most places all around the place, you have usually the information that if, let's say, this closed circuit TV is in place, if security cameras are in place, you can readily find information. Who is filming this, and who is responsible for the data? And also, there has to be this indication of what specific reason this footage is being taken for. So in the shopping malls, you can see the reasoning, as Joe mentioned, for preventing, let's say, this theft. And other instances, also that would be the case in other, let's say, office space where you go and you have the cameras as well. And indeed, this is a violation of these laws. And we also can analyze it a bit further because probably the state data inspection will be able to find out who was behind this and who was in charge of this process of taking this. A snapshot out of out of the video and then putting it in to public access because we can understand that following the discussion that we just had about the restrictions about the politically sensitive situation, this was in my mind specifically intended to cause a political scandal and perhaps also to mandate the governmental fall down, meaning that the current cabinet would fall if the political scandal with regard to the prime minister not following the recommendations and the restrictions that he himself had put in place would surface. And it will be interesting to see whether we have the responsible person as someone from within Latvia. Could it be someone from the political arena, let's say perhaps associated with one or another party, or perhaps it could also have a link with some other country in whose interest it also would be to utilize this sensitive situation and create additional instability by letting the cabinet fall down and putting us into a political disarray and add to all these things that we have to manage also another task to put together or another cabinet.
It is definitely something that we will keep an eye on because I'm fascinating to see if we do find out who the culprit behind this was. Real quick, a couple of other measures which have come into force which Otto and I kind of hinted at a little bit earlier. So talking about schools, so grades 5 and 6 are now remotely learning. Okay, so up until recently, it had only been grades 7 and up, but now only grades 1 through 4, and then also preschools, kindergartens are still learning in person. All teachers are required to wear masks as they have been for a little while. There has to be a minimum of 3 square meters of space for each student in school, which is impossible for a lot of schools. And a lot of people have been criticizing Minister of Education Olga Shchuplinska for this being basically a backhanded way of going to distance learning without having to say, hey, we're going to distance learning for grades 1 through 4, because this is impossible in a lot of places. Then also, masks have to be worn in public transportation for people above the age of 7. It used to be 13, if I am correct, Otto. Am I correct about that? It was 13 and up. Yep, so no, it is
Yes.
7 and up. A lot of controversy also because there has been talk about requiring all students who are in-person learning to be wearing masks. We've also seen a major disinformation campaign go around about that, about the supposed effects that wearing a mask can have on your health. Which I don't know if you've ever talked to a dental assistant before, who works all day in a mask, or just like anybody who works in a construction site, is absurd. But suddenly this has become a major controversy. We saw Ray Baltica, the Baltic Center for Investigative Journalism, do a report on this. And this information that's going around, but there is a petition on the Monobals.lv portal. This is a portal where people can make different petitions that SIMA has to at least respond to if they receive a threshold of its 10,000 signatures, I believe. So I don't know. I mean, I don't see this actually going to affect. I think the public response has been very very negative to this idea of students wearing masks, and I don't really see it happening. Otto, one last thought before we kind of move on from kind of the COVID restrictions and the government's responses that I just wanted to mention was, I read this article. I think it was in The Independent, and they gave a very good analogy of with like abstinence-only education, where the government is using kind of like the just say no method, for example, or you know, I'm talking about like prohibition, for example, in the 1920s. Mm-hmm. Whereas it would have been better to understand that no matter what we do, no matter how many police we send out, or even the army was talked about to send out and enforce these measures, people are not going to follow them in completely, and they're just going to move underground instead. So it would be better to have measures that people actually follow, which might not quite be so effective, and have a compromise that way. What do you think about that? Because I thought that was an interesting take, and I see the merit to that. But I wanted to hear your thought on that before we move on a little bit.
Well, it is interesting to see that whatever the level of restrictions are, there will always be people who will not follow them, either because they have not heard about them, because it is also a matter of informing people that they have to follow it. And if they, let's say, do not access the internet regularly, or do not buy the newspapers, or do not listen to the radio, you have to find another way how to reach them, and that is not always possible. There are also those people who will not follow them consciously, and that is the biggest issue here, because you could, go forward with it very liberally, as you had initially the situation in Sweden and in Netherlands. At the same time, you can go also like very strictly as it is in Singapore. At the same time, that would perhaps go beyond what is accepted in a European democracy, and could be a problem here. I think it is a really big dilemma. Now we heard the Latvian police, a representative of the Latvian police, telling that that they will not tolerate these protestations against these restrictions, in the sense that if you have the restrictions in the law, they will have to be followed. We could see whether this stricter enforcement of these rules makes a difference in terms of statistics and in terms of the response, because, well, you already had a lot of restrictions in the spring. You had some restrictions over the summer and afterwards. At the same time, they were not policed efficiently. So also all of those, or many of those people who did follow them, thought that, well, why should I be the stupid one if all of the other people, or many of the other people, are not following and the enforcement is not in place? We can see that already in different Facebook groups, like people discussing these different travel arrangements, these different ways of how to, let's say, go from a place A to place B and to avoid these restrictions. So, I think that we certainly have to start with a smaller amount of restrictions, but at the same time, we have to enforce them as strongly as possible. Otherwise, we can go to both sides of the spectrum and still get no results at all.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with most of the points you made there. Two last things I want to mention about COVID before we move on. So we do have this... story we've been following for some time, that there could be a state of emergency declared in the field of healthcare due to the lack of medics. We've heard this manifest in different ways, also because of a lack of hospital beds or a lack of various resources in other ways. But it looks like this is something that is dangerously close to actually happening, especially if these numbers do continue as they are. Because, you do have to, I was shocked a couple days ago to realize that, we're up to above 20,000 cases, 20,000 cases in total of COVID. And I thought, is that really the case? You do have to remember that every single day that there's like 500, 600 cases, it all adds up. It's shocking that it's that high, but that's a huge amount of people. In fact, that's one of the things I've seen on the in the Latvian speaking internet, is people just straight up not believing that that's true. Just, where are all these people who have COVID? Well, they're all around us. I have students who have had COVID, or their family members have had COVID. They are out there. It's not a hoax. These people are all around us. We do have to keep that in mind. But it is pretty stunning. And then one good piece of news, which Otto put into the show document, I was happy to see this. So apparently the first contactless COVID test machine in the world is being installed. It looks like a collaboration between Riga Stradinj Clinical University Hospital and then the Ernest Gulbia Laboratory. Is that correct, Otto?
I'm sure about the Gulbia. I'm not sure how the E, what the E stands for, but that's the Gulbia Laboratory, right?
Ah, yes. Okay, so very, very cool news. You know, because I'm surprised to hear this, the very first in the world, this contact-free COVID testing station. Hopefully, this is something that you know, if it is accurate and if it does work, we will see in more places as well. Because you know, we do have to solve this issue of testing and the personnel behind it. Do you think that we can finally move on from COVID, Otto?
I sincerely hope so.
Okay, let's move on to another very tricky situation, one that we have been following for a couple of weeks, and one that Otto will love to get into the details of. So the 2021 budget has been officially approved by SIMA. Otto, can you take us through what are some of the big takeaways from this budget and from the debate process behind it?
Sure. So not a surprise to either of us, healthcare gets the most
really?
In the new budget that has been approved. And that also includes the additional 183 million euros for the bonuses for medics who have to do the overtime and who are so engaged in dealing with all those things that they have to deal with, in addition to the COVID that we discussed so extensively. Also, you will see 33 million euros going for teacher salaries and more than 95 million euros going for providing the guaranteed minimum income. So all these additions required for raising the minimum pensions and the minimum state aid. Also, one other thing that will be raised according to the laws that have been approved will be the minimum salary, which will go up to 500 euros. And so will also up go the income tax threshold, which will be raised to 300 euros and to 330 euros for senior citizens. So let us remember that also from the pension that the seniors receive, they have to pay income tax. Also, there have been alternative tax regimes that are revised by these new budget laws, and the local fruits and vegetables will keep their lower value-added tax, while the tax for tobacco and waste disposal will increase, which means that both cigarettes will cost more and also probably we'll see a bigger waste disposal bill in our bills that we receive because, of course, we will be the ones who will then have to pay for it if this amount of waste that we do dispose stays the same.
And just for you fellow Americans out there, so the term value-added tax, that is Europe's very fancy schmancy name for sales tax, which we are used to having in America.
That's
which,
right.
Yeah, functions in a similar way. There are some small details which are different, which we will not get into right now. You can message Otto and he would be happy to take you through them. But for 90% of us, it's basically a sales tax. So it'll be interesting to see how this budget shakes out. So one thing apparently that has been approved is 100 million euros for new road construction next year. Is that correct, Otto?
Yes. So we will see the ability to continue the road reconstruction program that went so very well this year because you had all the money that was not spent for salt and cleaning the snow and was put instead into reconstructing a variety of regional roads.
Yeah, can we, I don't want to sound, because, I don't want to sound like the kind of person who complains about everything. Because on one hand, you know, we hear people complain all the time about the state of Latvia's roads, you know, especially when you go out into the countryside, because it's just harder and more expensive to maintain these roads, that very, very few people drive down. But in Jelgava, I mean, you know, we just can't get a break because two summers ago, some genius in the state road service decided to plan renovations in all of Jelgava's entries at the same time. So it didn't matter which way you were driving to Riga, you were going to go through a flag man or like one of those temporary things. You know, so if you went through Ozolnieki, if you went through Majocelsk, if you went through Lithuania Highway, if you went through even the road to Yitzhava, it didn't matter. The only way that you could get to Riga without a without a flag man was this like one obscure road. You know, there was a dirt road that went through kind of along the train tracks. So that was 2 summers ago, and then this summer. You know, I remember thinking back in March, or I think it was either March or April, where they started renovating the road between Jelgava and Riga. It's this pretty, significant highway. You know, I was thinking, oh, great, they're doing it early, during this COVID situation, so they'll be able to get it done. Yeah. 4 months later, the entire lane is still closed. And it was so frustrating because they closed the entire northbound lane. It was something like 5 months, maybe even 6 months, because usually when you do this kind of road construction, or at least, what I'm used to in America is you do small sections, you don't close the entire lane for like, months at a time. I certainly hope wherever this money gets spent, first of all, please, Jelgava, our roads are okay. We don't need any more. I think major renovation for a while. So go do this somewhere else, please. And wherever you do it, please do so in a in a less difficult way for congestion, because that was just insane.
And now it is clear why the planning is so essential and why you need to have people working in planning in all of these matters. I know myself because I used to do strategic planning as well. So at least you know why people like those are employed and why they should be employed, especially in matters like this.
Yes. I mean, please, State Road Service, if you're listening right now, please, don't be afraid to reach out to Otto as a freelancer if you need to plan any kind of Jelgava road construction projects. If it's in like Ogre or whatever, that's fine. I don't drive over there, so. On a less funny note, because this is a pretty serious situation right now with Air Baltic. This is the flag carrier for Latvia. So it is called Air Baltic, though, because it is the largest airline in the Baltic region. Riga International mm-hmm. Airport is the hub. It is the air hub of the Baltic region, which is one of the reasons why the Rail Baltic project is going through the airport. Obviously, it's not a good situation for Air Baltic right now because nobody's flying, or very, very few people are flying. And apparently, from what it looks like, if things continue the way they are, they're not going to be able to continue operating past next September. Is that the case, Otto?
Yes, because the income for the company has decreased. Meaning that profits are much less than usual, and also they did receive some money from the government, and it will be then very important to see whether we will get this investment back, because it was the matter of 250 million euros that the company got to compensate for this fall of the profit. And hopefully, there will be some change in the overall situation so that the company can get back working, and our country, as the key shareholder in this company, would not have had given a bailout to a company that went down under, because that's a really big money and something that we could indeed use also in many other needs, such as in medicine, such as in other fields. So let's hope for the best. That the State Audit Office is looking at the money, how it is spent, and so we'll see how the situation will change.
Yeah, and part of Riga and Latvia's kind of strategic plan when it comes to the economy has been as a tourist destination. I mean, we've seen a real uptick over the last couple of years of people coming to Latvia, and even using Latvia as a hub of transit to other places as well. So it is, I think, very important that that Air Baltic continues. I mean, I'm personally not a as a client of Air Baltic in the past. I think that they could also maybe use some of that money to improve some of their, seating or something like that. But it is very, very important that, we do have a a strong air infrastructure, and you know, because this is something that I think has boosted Latvia's economy over the last couple of years, and we can't lose that because of the pandemic situation. So.
Exactly, because it is on the one hand the matter of tourism, which indeed feeds a lot of people in Latvia, but also it is the matter of business, of the conferences, of the office space that we have here, and all the different variety of opportunities that brings to our capital city instead of other ones.
Definitely, yeah. A couple other stories before we go international. So first of all, if you are sending presents via Latvia's Pass, Latvia's mail, please do so early this year. They are asking people because if you are like me and you wait until the last possible minute to remember, oh shoot, I have to send these gifts, those gifts could end up very, very, very late. So you know, even if you're sending them right now, I have a hard time believing that they're probably going to get wherever they're going on time if they're going international. But I think they're even talking about, you know, internally, it's going to be difficult to deliver because, you know, so many people are buying things online right now. That was one kind of interesting thing that we didn't mention earlier. Apparently, online stores have had, if I remember reading correctly, it was something like a 100% increase in the amount of sales that they've had over the weekend. So, you know, that also puts strain on the post service, just sending all these goods left and right, you know, in kind of an unexpected way. So please do that. Otto, we have some interesting news to report with our good friends KPVLV. So this was the this is the political party which we've talked about ad nauseum at this point. So they were led in the 2018 election by Artus Kaimiņš and Aldis Gobzems, what seems like a lifetime ago, because both of those figures spent the confirmation hearings session of Saeima attacking one another, and then basically, you know, both being kicked out of the party one way or another. So you know, that party, you know, they had a meteoric rise thanks to Mr. Gobs and Mr. Kaimiņš, who are able to put aside their differences and their egos to set up this party. You know, they had a very, very populist outlook, and you know, they captured a lot of these issues, you know, in a very populist way. The party has not been doing so well lately, though. And Otto, it seems like they're losing a few more key members. So can you take us through what's happening over in their neck of the woods right now?
You see, it is so interesting. I now remember one of the episodes. I think it was close to 2 years ago when we discussed the rise of the party and then a number of divorce courts that,
We have to bring back
well,
that
I think
segment,
we.
yeah.
Yes, because I think should it be divorce number three that is happening within the same political family, as there I really did not expect for them to split further than they have already had. I thought that perhaps Zakatistovs had with an iron fist gathered this very strong leadership and got their act together. But it just seems that this vision has not been shared by part of the members of the party, as a key problem here has been the matter of the state funding that the parties receive, and KPVLV, as the second best party in the last parliamentary elections, got a lot of money, because I think it is at least 50 cents per vote that they get from the state. And that is the state funding that they receive, and that is not including the money that they receive as private donations. So apparently, a large number of the members were so disgruntled with what they saw as deficiencies in the decision making and the circulation of information, that they decided to kick out party leader Zakatistovs and also the member of parliament Ralfs Nemiro, who used to be the minister of economics representing the party. And apparently, the key issue indeed has been this matter of what has happened with the money and how it has been spent. And this has caused both sides, both the members who voted for this kick out, and also the existing or the former member Zakatistos, who was the leader, to try to appeal this. And one side is saying that, oh, we have to resolve this. There has been problems with the decision making. On the other hand, you had the other people who say, oh, this is a raiderism attempt and the takeover attempt of the party. So unless there will be another reason for the party to split even further, I think this could be probably one of the final bells for this political organization.
Nemiro was their Rigamiro candidate too, wasn't he? If I remember correctly.
Oh yes,
it seems like another lifetime ago already. It was just like
very good positions.
Yeah. Yes. I think
just recently there were at the front of this.
Yeah, you know, I think a fun game to play would be, you know, not like who's been kicked out of KPV or left KPV, who's still in KPV at this point. I mean, you know, I'm having a hard time thinking. I mean, is Sandis Dirgens or Ramon Petrevich still in the party? Who's left?
I think that they are still there, but probably after this week, we will need a clarification from the Enterprise Register, which is also the one that registers parties, to clarify this. Because, you know, a party has to have a certain number of members, at least when establishing it. So we'll see whether they are not in odds with the current law.
When we have time and once this is all kind of like said and done, we have to just do an entire episode on the rise and fall of KPVLV, because it's a wild story. It really, really is. So we can look forward to that. Then one more story, which Otto will be very happy to hear. So this is about the national defense classes, which are under a pilot program right now. So back during Soviet times, actually, there was a class that was obligatory in Latvia and in other places throughout the Soviet Union, where you know, people were taught how to, you know, clean guns and you know, shoot AK-47s and, you know, among other things. I mean, that's the thing which, you know, my older colleagues love to talk about and remember. You know, up in, you know, the school I teach in, there's a shooting range on the top floor, which is now the hallway to my classroom. You know, but if you peel back the wallpaper that's been put up, you can still see, you know, some of the little BB gun bullet holes, which is kind of funny. This new national defense courses, it's not quite the same as what was you know, done during Soviet times. This is a lot more based on problem solving, for example, and, you know, different survival skills. You know, it's not only about you know, like, in, you know, preparing people for some kind of you know, like, military invasion, heaven forbid. You know, it's also about, you know, 21st century skills as well. So my school right now, Jelgava Spirala State Gymnasium, we are a pilot school in this project, and the students I have talked to generally love it. You know, and this is going to become a mandatory class in 2024. So, Otto, what's your take on this? Because this is something obviously that you hear a lot about in your in your sector.
It is certainly very important because, as you rightly mentioned, it is not only, let's say, matters of military conflict between two countries. That is something that a citizen of any country should think about these resilient strategies against this, but also many other issues such as natural disasters and disasters created by human action, such as industrial disasters, which also may serve as a source of a crisis. And then we have to be ready of how to be prepared for this and how to respond to that. In all these directions, both this conventional defense and security and also these other ideas. I think it is also very important that the subject will include matters of state history and the principles of national protection, because we have to understand that we are not talking about, let's say, a theoretical chess game or war games or something like that. We are here looking at the matters that have been put in the national constitution and all the rights and obligations that come out of it. And therefore, it is also very important to remember that also our army, also the people who professionally safeguard the security and defense of Latvia, the basic principle of their work is all these ideas that are in the constitution. That is something that they have to follow and something that they have to protect. It's the matter of the way how the state is organized, the matter of territorial integrity, the core values and liberties that are in place. And especially as we can see it, sometimes the way how society responds to some court cases, or the way how society responds to some obligations or agreements that, let's say, Latvia agrees on the international arena, it is important to remind them, and it's important to teach them all these matters so that it is clear for them why that is the case, what are the key steps that are necessary to safeguard democracy, to safeguard our country, and how is that connected to the Constitution. And that is not something that the politicians take out from thin air, but that is rather something that is indeed set in our basic law.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how this is rolled out throughout the rest of the country, but there is a few years to work on the details of that. Which brings us to international stories now, Otto. It's been a while.
Yes.
But it's time to talk about the B word again. So for those of you who are newer to the show, the B word is a reference to Brexit, because my British friends, they would just tell me, please don't talk about the B word. You know, we don't talk about the B word. You know, don't mention the B word. We have to mention the B word, Otto, because one thing that's kind of been lost in the shuffle, normally if we did not have a global pandemic, this would probably be, you know, the top story that everyone's talking about is this process of negotiating a deal between the European Union and the United Kingdom, a permanent deal, not the temporary one that was negotiated previously. And it looks like some of the major sticking points, looks like there has been some progress recently. Can you take us through what is the current situation there in those negotiations? Mm-hmm.
So as we can see and hear from the news, there have been, and there is still ongoing, some last minute attempts to actually get through a deal which could be there in place to be ratified by all the parliaments on both sides of the matter. But one positive achievement which I would like to mention, because it is really encouraging, is that the European Union and the United Kingdom have achieved an agreement in principle on the border check arrangements between the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland, which used to be one of the biggest issues of all this B-word story, and something that also had implications not only for, let's say, United Kingdom and Ireland, or let's say the European Union, but also we also heard a response from the United States. For example, the incoming U.S. President-elect Biden also shared his view on the importance of this matter, or partially of how it is important for the United States, and also partially based on his own heritage that he has proudly shared, and his connections to his Irish relatives. So it seems that both sides have agreed that there won't be this break off, and let's say this unilateral action from the side of United Kingdom, and then some kind of a very strict response from the EU. And that's probably one of the most positive news that we have heard about all of this in the most recent time, which also probably makes it more plausible that a deal will be achieved, or even if they do not agree on all matters with regard to trade, at least this political matter will be laid to rest, and the principles of the Good Friday Agreement that brought to an end the political violence on the island of Ireland will stay in place. I think that is a very important, probably one of the most important aspects of all of this, don't you think, Joe?
Absolutely. And I just want to clarify also the reason why we're talking about this on Latvia Weekly is because there are a massive amount of not only Latvian citizens who are living in the United Kingdom, something, if I remember correctly, there's something, so not in terms of, I don't know if it's technically citizens, but something around like 100,000 Latvians or people of Latvian heritage living in the United Kingdom, so either first, second, third generation or more. If I remember correctly, that was the number.
That's right, yes.
Yeah, so huge amount. So a lot of people who could be affected by this. Also, British nationals living in Latvia as well. There's a high number. You might be a British national living in Latvia, or you might be a Latvian living in the United Kingdom. In any case, please, for the love of everything good in the world, if you have not checked with your embassy to make sure that you are properly registered and that everything's in place before whatever happens, at the end of the year, please do that because, we don't want to lose you here in Latvia. We want to make sure that you can continue staying here in any situation. So,
Yes, because we indeed mentioned the story as when we talk about the EU, Latvia, the Republic of Latvia, indeed will be one of the countries that will have to ratify this agreement.
yeah,
But
certainly.
what is your responsibility should you be a British citizen in Latvia or a Latvian in the United Kingdom? Indeed, as Joe said, check all the requirements and make sure that you have done your homework, because after January the 1st, things will change, whatever the deal is, and we would not want for you to be in a worse position just because you have not watched something. There is still time to do it. So please follow that, read everything, contact the institutions, and hopefully you'll be fine.
And another organization that Latvia is a member of, aside from just the EU, is the United Nations. And there has been a new resolution approved that is a warning kind of to Latvia's eastern neighbors. So can you take us through what this proposed resolution looks like, Otto?
Exactly. So here we are talking about a resolution of the General Assembly, which was proposed by 40 countries, including Latvia, calling for Russia to stop the occupation of Crimea. And the General Assembly voted to approve this resolution. And here we have to remember that even though the Russian Federation is a member of the United Nations Security Council and is able to veto any motions that go through the Security Council, that is not the case for the General Assembly, which joins all members of the United Nations. And even though it has not such a force as a Security Council a decision would have, it still has political significance and will be used by not only Ukraine, but also all of the other countries of the international society to remind Russia that the aggression that it conducted is not legal, and steps should be made to find a recourse to this and bring an end to this occupation, meaning that under international law, this act will not be recognized.
Yes, so I have a feeling that this is something we're going to be hearing a little bit more about in the near future. One cool story talking about the UK. So there is another new Latvian citizen that we have from the United Kingdom. This is the conductor Karl Mark Chichon. I hope I am pronouncing his name correctly. So he has a number of various very impressive honors that he has been given by a number of countries, including his own. But Latvian citizenship is a is an amazing honor because he has done a lot to help popularize Latvian classical music abroad throughout the world. So this is much appreciated. Helping to get more global audiences to know about Latvian culture and Latvian music. So that was Saeima, Latvian Parliament, who did vote to grant him citizenship, and he has done that oath to uphold the Latvian constitution and everything that comes with that. So congratulations to Mr. Chichon. Otto, anything you'd like to mention about this?
Yes, I would like to come. Commend Mr. Shishon as a very well-renowned conductor of the Latvian National Symphony Orchestra, and I think that this is part of his great achievement with regard to the Latvian culture and also with the ability to promote Latvian culture abroad. So I think this is very well deserved.
Yes, sorry, I forgot to mention that he's our conductor. That's an important detail I left out there. So thank you, Otto. Then we also have, speaking of music, so the 25th Latvian Song and Dance Festival in the United States will be held in year 2022. Hopefully, we will be long done with this pandemic by then. It'll be held in St. Paul, Minnesota, which I am not surprised about because Minnesota is a major hub of Latvian culture in the United States. There are many, many, many Latvians who, when they fled the Soviet occupation, they went to Minnesota because Minnesota is very full of forests and lakes and St. Paul, that is the twin city of Minnesota. So they're basically joined at the hip right there. So it will be held on the St. Paul side in the year 2022. So if you are in the United States listening and would like to get over to St. Paul and learn more about Latvian song and dance culture, you will have that opportunity to. And I think also there will be some various collectives from Latvia and from other countries as well who will be taking part in that festival. So something to look forward to. I mean, it's a ways away, but but we will get there eventually, I hope.
Yes. And let me also add that you can find more about this on the website latviansongfest2022.org. I think this will be a brilliant event, remembering that the Latvian community in the United States is, I think, still the largest Latvian community outside Latvia. So we look forward very much to this very important event to Latvian culture.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Otto, that brings us to a very somber thing that we have to remember for the week in history. So some of you might have been surprised that we didn't talk about this last week because this was in the Latvian speaking media and in the English speaking Latvian media as well. This is the massacre by Nazi occupiers of Jewish Latvians in Rumbula, which is like a forested area. Well, technically now it's within Riga. I'm not sure if it was technically in Riga city limits at the time. But Otto, can you tell us a little bit about what happened here on November 30th and then December 8th?
For those of our listeners who have exited Riga either via car or by train in the direction of Uagre or Daug Pils, so by the Daugava River, there is the train station Rumbula, and also there is a direction on the main highway going that direction to this place in Rumbula Forest, where in 1941, on November 30th and December 8th, more than 25,000 people were shot. Most of them being Jewish Latvians, and approximately 1,000 of them being Jews deported from Germany for the reason that the Nazis wanted them killed during the Holocaust. So from the Latvian Jewish community of approximately 90,000 people, approximately 75,000 were killed during the Holocaust by the Nazis and their associates. And this mass killing in Rumbula was one of the largest events of such kind, certainly in Latvia and also in this part of the world when it was under the Nazi occupation in World War II. After the war, the Soviet authorities, which now controlled Latvia, stymied the remembrance of the event, removing the original memorial plaque in the 1960s. But the community of local Jews later gained permission to put up a memorial stone, which had to have a more politically correct title, saying that this was put up to commemorate the victims of fascism and did not have any references to Holocaust as such. In 2002, a memorial ensemble designed by architect Rij was unveiled in Rumbula, and that is the one that we can see today. It was created with financial support granted by institutions of Latvia, Israel, the United States, and Germany. And I think it was important to see this year, as it was also in now many previous years, that representatives of the Latvian government, together with the representatives of several foreign embassies, participated in the events that commemorated this, as now it is possible to freely speak about this and to remember this as a somber part of our very difficult history.
Yeah, and over the last couple of years, there's been a tradition to put candles at the Freedom Monument. Obviously, that didn't happen this year, so people were invited by the president and to light candles at home instead. And yeah, so the reason why we chose this week to talk about instead of November 30th, and most people did, was just to highlight that also on December 8th, there were a large amount of killings as well. So this was not just a one-day event, unfortunately, a very, very tragic one, and one that I've been saying it's a very positive thing that more and more people are becoming educated about this, because that's the only thing that can stop this kind of thing from happening again is just people knowing about it and knowing how to see the warning signs of things like this. So that's for the week in history. Yes. We have a much happier note to end on, though, when we talk about the week in the future. So first of all, you have a point about sightseeing you'd like to mention, Otto.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So it is partially connected to the historic legacy of war that we have that still does prevent us from enjoying the very beautiful Latvian nature at times. And here I wanted to mention the case of unexploded ordnance that can be found at some places in Latvia and was recently found at seaside outside Liepāja. So this is something that I wanted to note for our listeners, especially the ones from abroad that might have heard less about this, that be careful that there would still be some ordnance as a legacy of either the war or, let's say, the military exercises of the Soviet Union during the occupation. Be careful if you find any ordnance, and then the first thing that you have to do is to call the police and inform them about this so that specialists could be brought in to deal with this. So that we could enjoy all of these beautiful spots of Latvia, which in some instances, unfortunately, have been polluted with such kind of material.
And then the last thing I'd like to mention, so one fun thing that we can do, so this came out of, so I came up with this with my wife, and so we'd have this movie night, okay? And so basically anybody can join because on filmus.lv, this is something we've talked about the last couple of weeks, the Latvian film portal, filmas.lv, there's a bunch of movies which have been released, 19 of them to be exact. These are Latvian film classics that have English subtitles because for a long time you've been able to watch some of these films on that website, but they don't have English subtitles. And basically what we do is we all press play at the same time because, you know, of course, if we had some kind of like, you know, live stream, that would be an issue with copyrights. And basically after that, we just kind of discuss them either like in a little live chat or also on these event pages. And, you know, last week I wasn't really sure how it would go, if anyone would be interested, if anyone would actually do it. And we had quite a few people. I mean, you know, in the live chat itself, we had like, I think like 10 or 11 people. And then there was a bunch more who, were writing on the page. So if you are interested in learning about Latvian cinema in Latvian art, and would like, you know, and also have nothing to do, here it's Friday night. We also had some people from America, you know, it was, Saturday night. We had some people in America. It was Saturday afternoon, their time, we watched these movies together, and it's like a movie night with your friends. And, I got to know some new people. I got to know some listeners of the show who joined in as well, who I hadn't gotten a chance to talk to or meet before. And I hope to see some of you there as well. I think, Otto, you're going to try to make it out this week, aren't you?
Certainly I will try, because I think this is a wonderful idea, and also a great way for everyone to get to know some of the gems of Latvian cinema. The collection that they have put up for free for everyone to view is indeed a marvelous one, starting from one of the oldest, how do you call those movies, the ones with no sound?
Silent films. Yeah, silent films.
Exactly. So, with one of the earliest silent films that you have, and also you have some of the animation movies, the cartoons, and also some of the periods of the 60s and the 70s, and also all the way up to the 90s, which I think gives a very good overview of how the cinematic art has developed, but also it shows a lot of the ways how the society and people were at that time. So I think that this is a great initiative, and I will indeed try to join.
Yeah, and anyone can join. I mean, you know, I had former students who joined in as well. I mean, anywhere in the world. These are not region blocked. And if you can't make it at 9, you know, I had some people write to me, "Oh shoot, you know, I'm not going to be able to make it tonight." You know, you can just watch it yourself too, and comment later. So you can check that out. That's on the Latvia Weekly Facebook page. There's going to be an event link there. And each week we're voting on the movie. So last week we did Četri Balti Krekli, which was my recommendation on the show already. People loved it, which I was very, very happy about. And next week, who knows what it'll do. So you can go to the Latvia Weekly Facebook page, find that event page, and vote as well. And we hope to see you there. We also hope that you are healthy wherever you are in the world, that you are holding up well. And we thank you so much for listening to the show and being here with us to talk about what's happening here in Latvia. So any last things you'd like to mention, Otto, before we sign off?
Yeah, thank you very much for following us. Indeed, I share the sentiment with regard to health, so let's be stronger this time. And feel free to reach out to us. We are here for you.
Absolutely. That's why we do this. We are absolutely 100% here for you. And until next time that you are here with us, Visu labu visiem.
Visu labu.